welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 14th, 2021. Happy birthday to my brother Mark out there in Radio Land. So, Massachusetts is in the beginning of a new legislative session in which there are many, many bills that have been put in to the for consideration. Many of those bills are related to climate. And many of those bills have kind of an interlocking structure in that they're all implementing different important parts of the fight against climate change. One important bill is called the 100% Clean Act because it is intended to take the state of Massachusetts from where we are now on a specific timeline to getting 100% clean electricity and 100% clean energy. The distinction being that, for example, you can heat your house with a heat pump, right? It doesn't use any methane gas. It doesn't use that much electricity, but it's an energy source that you can tap into. It's clean energy. It's slightly different from clean electricity, which is an interesting. So this bill wants the state to get to clean energy so that our homes and our transportation is all clean, powered with zero carbon emissions by the year 2045. And so that voice you hear in the background is the expert. So I'm going to turn the show over to him. Ben Hellestein from Environment Massachusetts is one of the great minds behind this clean 100% Clean Act and knows it much better than I. So I want to turn the show over to him. Ben, tell me, did I sort of get the description of clean energy correct, or what's the story?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. In this bill, we're talking about more than just the energy that we use in the electric sector. We're talking about the energy that we use to heat our homes. We're talking about the energy that we use to power our transportation system. If you take those three together, electricity, heating, and transportation, those are by far the three biggest uses of fossil fuels in our state and the three biggest sources of global warming emissions. And this bill would transition all three of those sectors entirely to clean energy for electricity by 2035 and for heating and transportation by 2045.
And how does it go about doing that? So I know that in a recent show, we talked about using what's called a renewable portfolio standard, which is an existing kind of mechanism that forces the utilities to get to use more and more clean electricity that comes from wind turbines and stuff. But when we're talking about changing, say, the transportation system, which is both cars and MBTA and buses in every city and town, you get that whole chunk of things, and you have houses all through the state. How do we drive the clean energy into those systems? Is there a mechanism to do that?
So I think a really important thing to say about this bill is that it sets out a big and bold vision for how do we get to 100% clean electricity, heating, and transportation. But it's not just about setting goals. It's also about putting the policies and the requirements in place to make sure that we actually reach those targets. And for the transportation sector and for heating, there are a number of really important steps that this bill would take that would really help to get us on the right track. So I think, transportation is... it's a really interesting problem. How do we get rid of fossil fuels in transportation? And I think that for many people, including our governor, the place where their mind goes initially is, well, let's just take all of our cars and make those electric vehicles, right? And it's true, that if we did that, if we made all of our cars electric vehicles, and if we made sure the electricity came from clean and renewable sources, we would eliminate carbon pollution from the transportation sector. However, that would be, in my view, a very inefficient and unwise way for us to achieve this objective. So we absolutely need electric vehicles. We need to make sure that anytime people drive, that they're driving an electric vehicle. But we also need to make sure that we're providing alternatives to driving, so that we're enabling people to take the train to get to work, that we're enabling them to take the bus to, visit their friends or, go buy groceries, that you know, that more people have the option to live in neighborhoods that are walkable and bikeable and, you know, just easy to get around. And, you know, I think we need to do that at the same time that we do electric vehicles. And if we do, you know, not only will we reduce our, you know, eliminate our carbon emissions and eliminate the other harmful pollution that results from fossil fuels, we will also, you know, address many of the other problems that we're facing, right? So, you know, the sort of, tremendous traffic jams that we all get into when we're driving to work. I mean, you know, people may have forgotten about that because, you know, we've been in a pandemic for the last year, but, you know, that's going to come back, right? I mean, it sort of already is coming back.
It's still a traffic jam if you have an electric vehicle or not, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, I just think of like all the hours that people spend just, you know, sort of stuck in their cars, and it doesn't have to be that way. So I think that this is, you know, it's a big challenge, but there's also an opportunity to think a little bit differently about how we do things.
So I think the bill by fiat, I think, says all cars sold after 2035 must be electric or zero emission vehicles, right? So there is this, how in the bill is the other side of what you're saying is kind of reshaping communities to make them more walkable, right? To have electric buses that are frequent enough that, yeah, you might actually consider using that to run to the supermarket. And that what follows on from that is like probably decades of slowly shifting population around these transportation nodes, right? And that, I mean, it's a big, I mean, how does the bill propose to encourage walkable streets, for example, and communities like that?
I think a lot of it is about giving people more options. You know, so there are more people out there who would like to live in neighborhoods that are easy to get around by walking, by biking. You know, that would like to be able to take public transit, you know, to work or on their various errands throughout the day. And we're just not making it easy for people to do that. You know, and I think partly that has to do with our land use patterns, you know, and how our communities have been built up. I think partly it has to do with the way that we are using space on our streets, you know, so that we don't really have, you know, dedicated bike lanes or bus lanes in many places, you know, which means that it can feel, you know, unsafe to ride your bike around town, or, you know, it can be very slow to take a bus to get somewhere. So this bill takes a number of steps to help to make those options more available to people. And one of them is it establishes a Main Streets office in the Department of Transportation, whose job it is to work with communities to help develop neighborhoods that are more walkable and bikeable and accessible to public transit, and to make improvements in their streets, you know, such as setting aside designated bus lanes so that our transit system can operate more effectively.
I presume that part of the cleaning up the transportation sector would be to have public transport, buses and whatnot, become electric, right? Is that mandated, or is that how does the bill get there?
Yeah, so it is mandated. So for the MBTA, the bill would require all buses in operation to be zero emission vehicles, so most likely electric vehicles, by the year 2030. Mm-hmm. And for the regional transit authorities, which are the transit agencies that operate outside of Boston, outside of the Boston area, those buses would have to be electric by 2035. Mm-hmm. The bill would also require the electrification of the commuter rail system. So I think, you know, for folks that have ever, you know, ever ridden the train or, you know, ever been to North Station or South Station, I mean, you know, you see these, you know, sort of huge hulking locomotives, and you stand next to them and they're extremely loud. You know, it's just like the vibration, you know, and the noise, and also they're just they're pretty polluting too. I mean, it's still better than all those people driving, but nevertheless, you know, these locomotives, they do emit pollution. And so this bill would convert those trains to electric power, and then also try to make that happen at the same time as we're also making infrastructure improvements that would enable better service. So in places where we have, you know, one platform currently at a train station, we might have two platforms. So you could have sort of service simultaneously in both directions. So,
right.
I think, you know, kind of more integrated approach, you know, electrifying our public transit, and at the same time, improving service and trying to make it more widely available to people.
I guess the other, when we talk about clean energy as distinct from clean electricity, the other big topic is is buildings, right? Because they consume. So what is a typical building? Typically, I imagine in the past, many homes in New England were heated by oil. And over the last few decades, everything shifted over to using methane or natural gas to heat homes. That's kind of the modern thing. But the future envisions using other technologies that don't involve burning gas to heat homes. And that's what I think the buzzword is, heat pumps, which we can go into. But tell me how... Let's just say that the technologies exist to heat and cool homes in the New England environment, even with the harsh winters, right, that do not require burning natural gas, right? And so all that exists. The question is, how does the bill encourage the transition of buildings, because there's a lot of buildings here, as you can imagine, here in New England, right? How are we going to get them all to be clean? What's the plan?
Yeah, so the biggest culprit in terms of our buildings is, as you said, the fossil fuels that we use for heating. So in many cases it is gas. There's a lot of buildings in Massachusetts that still use oil for heating. Some of them actually use propane. So across the board, we need to be getting them off of fossil fuels. And the good news is that, as you said, the technologies are available to heat and cool our homes effectively and efficiently with electricity, even in our often challenging climate that we have in Massachusetts and New England. I think some people, when they think about electric heating, they think about the old electric resistance heating or the sort of baseboards, which are run on electricity but also use a lot of power and can be fairly inefficient. Heat pumps are several times more efficient than the old forms of electric heating. And, using our current electricity mix off the grid are already cleaner than oil and gas, and are only going to become even cleaner than that as we're getting more and more of our electricity from renewables.
Right. And so one of the things that I think about oftentimes when these kinds of discussions come up, because the clean energy transition is much, it touches people in a way that getting to clean electricity doesn't, right? If your LED light bulb is running from a wind turbine, you probably don't know it, right? But if your house is running on a heat, ground source heat pump, and, you're taking an electric train, that touches your life more directly. And there are questions that come of, who's going to benefit? Are we going to continue with sort of the existing benefits to, people in the suburbs? Are they going to get a shiny new train to come into town? Or all of a sudden we're going to fix up a bunch of houses, triple deckers, and we'll get people gentrifying the neighborhood? I mean, how does the bill... I mean, since we're talking about really the warp and woof of people's life when we're talking about their homes and how they get around, what provisions are there in the bill that would allow the people that would be affected by this to maintain control of the process? Let me say that. Mm-hmm. How does that fit in?
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's really important. I think that we need to... accomplish this transition in a way that brings everybody along. And I think that in most cases, it's going to be more effective to convince people that the clean energy option is the better option and provide them with the incentives and the support necessary to make those changes than it will be to twist their arm, And so I think that this bill, looks at doing that in a few different ways. One is that it would direct the utilities and the state agencies to complete at least 1 million retrofits of residential units across the state over the next 10 years, in addition to commercial buildings. And it would also ensure...
Benefit, too far away from that, the utilities will be directed at their own cost to upgrade people's homes? Is that the idea?
So there's a few different ways that it could happen. We have existing energy efficiency programs in Massachusetts Mass Save, yep, which is funded through a charge that's collected on our electric bills and our gas bills. And I think that that can be one mechanism to accomplish these retrofits, and that's subject to the State Department of Public Utilities is the entity that oversees that and that makes the decision about those programs. It could be other programs as well. I think, you know, we'll probably need to have, you know, sort of other sources of investment, other support for people to make these transitions. But, you know, I think it's really about, again, you know, convincing people this is the better option, right? And showing people that it's possible, you know? So I think that once we get to a point where, you know, it's like in every neighborhood, you know, everybody has, you know, a neighbor or a friend or a family member who has insulated their home and installed heat pumps, and, you know, they can go over and see it and they say, oh, wow, there's like, there's no fuel, there's no pollution, like the air is cleaner inside this home. It's more comfortable, you know, because there's less cold air leaking in through the walls and through the windows. I think all these are things that are going to help to sell people on the kinds of changes that we need to make.
I have this dream that the ground source heat pumps will mostly be put in to have heat pipes in the floor so that your floor is warm, which I think would be a dream, right?
Yeah, that would be nice in January.
Tell me, though, about what, so some of the stuff I see in the bill talks about a just transition office for people who might lose their jobs as all this stuff goes forward, and that there is a clean energy equity office that will attempt to make sure that, you know, all of this money and improvement flowing into neighborhoods protects the core integrity of the original neighborhood, I guess. Right. Mm-hmm. So what are those two aspects of the bill?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's undoubtedly true that as we move towards clean energy, that there are going to be certain industries and certain sectors of the economy that are affected. And, you know, I think the bottom line is that we know that we need to stop using fossil fuels in order to ensure a safe and livable planet for us and for our children. And so we just can't keep doing things like, you know, drilling for oil and gas or, you know, laying gas pipes under our streets. Like it's just incompatible with us being able to survive and thrive in our communities. But at the same time, I think we can do that in a way that you know, respects the workers who have been doing that kind of work and creates you know, other pathways for them to be able to support their families. And one aspect of the bill that's really important in that we've actually, you know, there's been a lot of input from the labor community in terms of crafting this language is creating a just transition office to help basically, you know, assess, you know, who are the workers that are going to be affected and what are their needs in terms of, you know, retraining and job placement assistance and sort of other support that they may need, including being able to actually work in the clean energy industry because there may be, you know, some of these job skills that actually are transferable. So, so that's the first piece. The second piece is around equity for clean energy implementation. And I think it's something that a number of advocates have pointed to that, you know, the state's existing programs, you know, whether it's for solar or energy efficiency, haven't always done a great job of serving all communities in Massachusetts, you know, whether that's people of color or low-income people or, you know, non-English speakers, you know, language can be a big barrier as well. And so this office would be set up basically to oversee that aspect of all the clean energy programs that the state has and make sure that environmental justice communities are getting a benefit from those programs that's at least proportional to their share of the overall population.
And I think it's important to keep in mind that there is a suite of bills coming into the State House. I think that the next generation climate bill, so the big bill that has gone back and forth, has enhanced environmental justice language in it, which would then complement the kinds of things that are being proposed in the 100% Clean Act. And there are other bills floating around out there about housing and ways to make sure that the housing improvements are done equitably. So all these bills together, I think, are built around the concept of bringing everyone along, having everyone participate in this clean energy transition. And I think it's so tell me, Ben, if someone was, I think, rightfully charmed by the ideas in the 100% Clean Act, what should they do? How can they help out? How can they make sure we get this bill over the finish line? What are the next steps?
Well, it is a charming bill, Ted. I think you're right to point that out. the most important thing right now is the bill has just been introduced. So just maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago was formally filed by legislators, and the lead sponsors are Representative Marjorie Decker and Sean Garbley in the House, and Senator Joe Boncori in the Senate. And now there's an opportunity where any legislator can sign on as a co-sponsor of the bill to indicate their support. And the legislative process is long. You know, it can take a year and a half, even more, for bills to move forward. And often, you know, it's not always clear to people exactly what's happening at any given moment. But the co-sponsorship is one really important opportunity for where any legislator can say, you know, yes, I support this, or no, I don't. And we can kind of hold them accountable to that decision. And so I would encourage all of your listeners to call up their legislators' offices and ask them to sign on as co-sponsors for the 100% Clean Act. And when they do so, they should give the docket numbers, which for the House bill is House Docket 3551. And for the Senate bill is Senate Docket 2205.
And if you're driving in your car and didn't write down those bill numbers, I will tell you that you can go to the MCAN blog, at which will be a link to then the Environment Massachusetts blog, which has the fact sheet. Tell us where how people can find the fact sheet if they want to come back after the fact, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so our website is www.environmentmassachusetts.org. And under the issues that we work on, we have a page for our 100% renewable energy campaign. And there you can find all the fact sheets for this bill and for the other bills that we're supporting.
Super, super, super. So we will put up links to all that kind of stuff on the MCAN blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. So you go there and check out and get a hard copy of all that interesting information on that charming bill. If you have any questions about the podcast or any suggestions about what we ought to be doing, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly. You can listen to the show. You probably are now listening to the show on your smartphone using a modern podcast distribution app. Please rate us. Ask your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution apps. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support week after week. We really appreciate it. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and the price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to talk. It's been very interesting.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ted.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.